Good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. Sure, I get everything turned on here correctly. This time we begin the TechNet, as we've done so often for the last 1982, going on 37 years. The TechNet is the gathering of curious radio amateurs who teach each other an awful lot about the wireless technology. People gather here to find out how transmitters and receivers and antennas and low noise amplifiers and transmission lines, propagation, how does all that stuff work? About 25 or 30 different kinds of ham radio, 2-meter repeater ham radio you listen to right now is just one of the 25 kinds. Arguably, it's one of the most educational hobbies there is, so before you give up, if you become disappointed with the particular ham radio you're exposed to, try one of the other 25 kinds before giving it up. Wake up. The TechNet is broken up into three separate sections. The first section, hello, 1-2, oh, hi. The first section is where people sign in because they do have a question or a comment for the net, and we take them in order. And you need that sign in just because you're listening after 37 years. We believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. The second section of the net is where Dr. Roy, AC2GS, gives us the mailbag and a nice puzzle he's got ready lined up for us tonight, and other interesting things with reference to science talk. The third section is where Paul, WS2N, gives us the space report, tells us what NASA and all the other space agencies around the world, what they are doing. Let me drop. So right now you're going, those who do have a question or a comment for the net are going to sign in by giving me their call letters, their name, and the word yes means you do have a question or a comment. If you're just listening, you need not sign in because we believe somebody is listening, if you know what I mean. N2EO went to be signed in, so Rich has already signed in. Anyone else, give me your call letters and name right now. K2RI, W listening.
WB2AHK, check.
Okay, WB2, is it Alpha Hotel Kilo? And I think you said your name is Chet, is that true? Go ahead.
That is correct, WB2 American Ham King Chet.
Okay, we got Rich and Chet. Anyone else to check in? Because you do have a question or a comment, give me your call letters and name right now.
WHYY, Joe, yes.
Okay, we got Joe with a good sign in. Rich, Chet, and Joe. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name right now. One last call for anyone who signed in, wants to sign in because you got a question or a comment. Just give me your call letters and name right now.
KB2DXC, Phil, yes.
Okay, you spoke very low, so I wasn't sure. It sounds like Kilo Bravo 2 Delta X-ray Charlie. Is that true, Joe? Go ahead.
Okay, it's Kilo Bravo 2 Delta X-ray Charlie. My name is Phil. It's Papa Hotel. Excuse me. That's yes.
Okay, Phil, we got you. All right, more than enough to get started. Rich and 2EO, go right ahead.
Okay, Dick, good evening. N2EO, Rich, in Massapequa Park, Long Island. First, a comment and a question. You may remember I looked up on Harbach Electronics, they make a soft start. I thought only to the SB220 and SB200. When I looked on the miscellaneous on Harbach Electronics, they have a universal unit, soft start, that'll work on any radio, just not well advertised. And then I have a question, Dick.
Go ahead with your question, Rich.
Okay, Dick. I'm thinking about maybe a better antenna than I have now. Especially it worked well on 75 meters. You know what a have better than I do. It's 73 feet long, goes all the way down to 80. It's broadband, because any band I go to with the antenna tuner jumped out of the line, it's 4-1 mismatch. I wonder if I'm giving something up with the length on 80 meters. I was thinking of putting up either a Wyndham or just making a 132-foot length.
Rockaway area. He's very close to the sea. His antenna has probably
Your antenna might be set up north-south, and maybe his is east-west. So there's a darn many differences. You think it's because of lower performance of your antenna. I think it's mostly location and orientation of the antenna that's making the difference. By the way, when you're in the receiving mode, where does your S-meter sit on 80 meters of the rich? Go ahead.
Oh, I don't have a lot of noise. Usually S3. Now, I was on a group a little while before the net, and I find this with any net. The net control is well set up, is usually 10 to 20 over 9. I have difficulty hearing everybody else. That's why I'm worried. I wonder if this antenna maybe has a high angle.
You got cut off in mid-sentence. You wonder if the antenna has high angle blank. Want to finish that sentence?
Yes, I'm sorry. I wonder if the antenna has a high angle radiation, a high takeoff angle, where maybe a N-fed Z might not.
Your takeoff angle is primarily a function of how many wavelengths above the ground is the antenna. The ground, the earth in your neighborhood, is a kind of mirror reflector. And as the antenna is a short number of wavelengths above that ground, you start becoming a near vertical incident skywave antenna. So takeoff angle for horizontally polarized antennas is primarily a function of altitude. In the case of a vertically polarized antenna, that's different. Now you can get a lower angle of radiation. And I don't know if you've got a tree on your property tall enough that you'd be able to put up a vertically polarized wire antenna. But if you're going to make a change, that's the next one I would experiment with. Or, because wire antennas are not very expensive, by way of folding and zigzagging and whatever, you could put up a second antenna at right angle to the one you're using right now. And that may make quite a bit of improvement. But I think your next big improvement could be a vertically polarized antenna, if it was possible. And some of these compact antennas that are manufactured, I believe some of them are vertically polarized. A vertically polarized electronic half-wave antenna, although they're a little pricey, might give you a significant improvement, Rich. N2EO, K2RIW.
I understand, Vic. The only thing available that I would use, a Cushcraft R9. It's a half-wave vertical, so it only has, I think it's 7 or 8 short 48-inch radials. It's actually, it uses a matching unit. The radials are actually part of the antenna. They're not ground radios. I had an R8 in Whitestone that had a good accounting for itself. An R9, which covers 80 meters, is close to $600.
Yeah, that is kind of pricey. And to find out the design, reverse engineer it, homebrew it, would be a very elaborate project. I don't recommend that. Yeah. I can see why you'd be a little bit reluctant to buy a $600 antenna. It's too bad you don't have that R8 still in your position as a true... And by the way, the R8 probably didn't go down to 80 meters. But you had to give up the R8 when you moved there, Rich. Go ahead.
Yes, the one I had got broken up in the moving van. I had a second one, I loved it so much, in a box. Brand new one, open box. The only thing I can say to you would happen to it, one word, Patty.
Okay, there are various ways that you can homebrew a vertically polarized half-wave antenna. You might have a tree on the property tall enough to pull that off with certain kinds of electronic compacting techniques, like a helical winding and whatever. The fact that the antenna is physically shorter, as long as it hits resonance and made out of low-loss materials, it can still give you full performance, Rich. So, if you want low angle of radiation, I think your best way of getting it is with vertical polarization. Over to you, Rich, K2RIW.
Okay, Zick, I'd have to work out something to make it a half wave. Quarter wave, I can't run radios.
Understand. Yeah, electronic half wave, there's various ways of pulling that off with loading coils and top hat capacitors and so on. So maybe some research on that kind of a design is worth the effort, Rich, with a homebrew vertically polarized electronically half wave, even though mechanically it doesn't have to be anywhere near 132 feet. With various loading techniques, you could bring that down to maybe the altitude of the trees you got on your property.
KD2AMZ.
AMZ, start off with your name and go right ahead with your comments, sir.
KD2AMZ, Mike Rich. It's really very simple. Get yourself an 80-40 meter trap dipole antenna. It's electric. It's shortened electrically. It's about 80 feet long. It's an excellent antenna. You can homebrew one, or you can just buy something similar from like a DXCC from DX Engineering. Very simple. You'll get good performance. Nothing particularly complicated. Everything is covered in the ARRL handbook. Check it out. 82AMZ.
Rich, can that antenna be made vertically polarized on his property?
You can hang this thing vertically, but there's absolutely no reason for it. You use a trap dipole, which is an electrically shortened antenna. Works extremely well. I've been using one for years. Works perfectly well, and again, DX Engineering makes a fan type dipole, which for other bands, and it's about $180. That'll solve your problems. Really very simple, and you can homebrew it all, and everything you need to know is in the ARRL handbook.
Yeah, Rich's complaint that he doesn't have a low enough angle of radiation, and that's true because his antenna is not the right number of wavelengths above ground. And for him to mount the antenna very high in the trees without the trees breaking it as they sway in the wind represents a problem. I think he's going to get the biggest bang for the buck with vertical polarization. What do you think, Rich? K2RIW?
Oh, possibly you're right. I do have very tall trees on the property. Barry said when he comes back from South Carolina, he's going to help me. But I don't know how we would get way up in the trees. Maybe a slingshot.
Slingshot, bow and arrow. Yeah, there's various techniques by which that can be done. And Barry is crafty enough, he may be able to pull that off. So see if you can talk Barry into giving you some kind of a vertically polarized electronic half-wave antenna. I think that's going to give you the biggest bang for the dollar. Low angle of radiation, reasonably high efficiency. Covering the whole 80-meter band, that's a problem, but there's probably a favorite section of the band you like, maybe on 3805 or something like that. Over to you, Rich.
Well, the scoops I get into around 3900, but if I got to go elsewhere, couldn't I tune it out with the antenna tuner?
Absolutely, as long as you got a broad enough range on the antenna tuner. And as long as you don't run into the problem of the saturated ballon and a kilowatt of power burning up the antenna tuner. Over to you, Rich.
No, the ballon I have now is very good. I run 1,500 watts into it. I've had no trouble with that ballon. It's a 4-to-1 ballon. Goes in with coax from the tuner, a very short jumper, and then over to open wire line.
An open wire line's got some nice low loss at these frequencies. Okay, sounds like you got a good combination. Some further research could be required on your part. Chet's the next guy, WB2, Alpha Hotel Kilo. You got it, Chet, K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Thanks, Dick. All right. Hello, everybody. I'm Chet, WB2AHK in Floral Park. I'm in the market for a UHF duplexer. I, of course, know commercially made duplexers are quite expensive in comparison to the cheaper Chinese versions. You because obviously they have to be cutting corners in the materials they use in them. Interestingly, I noticed that they advertise two kinds, the notch type and the bandpass type. I can imagine that notch type duplexes using the poorer construction materials might not hold to the adjusted settings due to such things, among others, such as temperature changes. Question, do you think advertised bandpass duplexes that are constructed with cheaper, less optimum materials have a reasonable, usable chance to work well? My interest would be in ordering an 8-cavity one rated at 100 watts, selling for around $175, including shipping and pre-tuning. It will be going in the repeater I'm building, and power-wise, I would probably be sending 25 watts into it. Dick, your thoughts?
Okay, so your requirement for the duplex filter is because you're building a repeater. You want to use one single antenna for both transmitting and receiving simultaneously. And by way of the duplexer, you're hoping to get 100 and, let me pick a number. It'd be nice if you could get 110 dB of isolation between the transmit frequency and the receive frequency back into the receiver, so you're not getting desensitization. And to keep a duplexer well-aligned, high in performance over a period of time with aging, weather, and whatever, mechanical vibration, and so on, it's always a little bit of a problem. People are almost always tinkering with the duplexer in order to get higher isolation and less desensing of the repeater. If there's the slightest chance that you can use two separate antennas, one transmitting antenna and one receiving antenna, still with the duplexer, with the filtering, but by separating the antenna, you pick up a very rapid 20 dB of extra isolation, and all of a sudden the criticalness of the tuning and the quality of the duplexer becomes a hell of a lot less critical. Any chance you could operate with two separate antennas on your repeater, Chet, go ahead, K2RIW.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing now, and it works great. I had a Mobile duplexer from China, and I wasn't happy with the performance when it was cheap once. And I went to two separate antennas, and it works very nicely. But now I'm trying to simplify things in case I have to move the repeater that I have. And putting two antennas up is double the trouble. And lucky enough that I get the chance to put one antenna up. So you're thinking that I would really have to get a better duplexer rather than getting a Chinese one and then wasting my money. Is that what you're thinking? Over.
Even though you're only going to run 25 watts, let me think now. 10 watts is plus 40, 25 is close to plus 24 dBm. So plus 24 dBm on the transmit. Your receiver sensitivity is going to be something like minus 110. So you're looking for more than 100 dB of isolation. And you're looking for a perfect antenna that has no cracklies to it. The criticalness of the antenna, the criticalness of the tuning of the duplexer, in order to get full performance out of the repeater without it being desensed on transmit, it's something you're always going to be tinkering with. So there's a lot of trouble with a single antenna. You have to buy the highest quality antenna, the highest quality duplexer, and even then you're going to be tinkering with it. So although it's more troublesome to mount two antennas, you're way ahead of the game with two antennas with the number of times you're going to have to tinker with the repeater. No matter what duplexer you buy, no matter what antenna you buy, when you insist on everything being on one antenna, you're going to spend a certain number of hours of your life in the next few years tinkering with that and getting rid of the desense problem and finding out where the intermods are coming from, if you know what I mean. You become a hell of a lot more sensitive to intermodulation distortion, particularly if you're locating your repeater at a site where there are other nearby transmitters on the same facility. All of a sudden, the requirement for the filtering and isolation of the duplexer becomes extreme. Over to you, Chet, K2RIW, with one antenna.
All right, Dick. I'll save my $175 And I'll just have to keep my eye out, save some more pennies, take some more bottles back to the store, get the deposits back. And someday, magically, I'll come across somebody selling a commercial cell wave, a commercial American-made duplexer, and at the right price. And it'll take a while. I'm looking, but I haven't been able to find anything at this point. So I was almost ready to pop up my money and buy the Chinese thing. Again, because I have one. It works pretty good for what I'm using that one for. But what I want to do is different. I don't want to tanker. I don't have that much time. And I'll just take your advice and stay with what I have for now. And then keep on looking. Maybe I'll get lucky someday. Thanks, Dick. Back to net. WB2AHK.
The Chinese duplexer that you've either got or are considering, do they quote the number of decibels of isolation it is capable of supplying between transmitter and receiver? Do they quote the number of decibels of isolation? How about you, Chen?
Yeah, they only quote 75.
That is very marginal. With plus 25 dBm out of your transmitter, let me see now, one watt is plus 30, no, plus 45, plus 46, plus 45 dBm out of the transmitter, and 70 dB of isolation means a minus 30 dBm signal is going into the receiver. Almost every receiver with a good low noise preamplifier with that strong a signal going into it is going to be overloaded. Therefore, you're guaranteed to have intermodulation distortion if there's any other transmitter within a mile of your location. Over to you, Chet, K2RIW. You'd like to have 110 dB of isolation on your duplexer if you can get it. With careful tuning, you can get it. Can you keep it? The duplexer itself better be very high in quality in order for it to keep that isolation requirement as a function of age, temperature, humidity, weather, and whatever. 70 dB is nowhere near enough to get reliable. Unless you're the only repeater in town for the nearest few miles, you're not going to survive that with only 70 dB of isolation, in my opinion.
WHYY, why would a question?
Go ahead, Joe.
Chet, is this duplexer going to be used on a UHF system or VHF system?
He said UHF.
Okay, question number two. Are you looking for a notch-only duplexer, or are you looking for a pass-notch duplexer?
He was asking the relative merits of each one. Which one do you recommend, Joe?
Pass-notch, especially if you're going to put a preamp on it. You'd have to have a pass-notch duplexer, especially for it. I have at least one or two used duplexers, maybe Motorola, called the T1504. I use one on my UHF repeater. They have to be carefully tuned, but you can get approaching 110 decibels port-to-port isolation. It can be done, and they're low-Lewis duplexers.
Now, you said you got some of those duplexes. You're telling me the performance that you're able to get with the pass notch. You weren't saying that you have an extra duplexer sitting around that Chet could buy from you. That's not what you were saying. Is that true, Joe?
I said I have extra duplexers. I'm using one of them on my repeater, my current repeater I have. I have a T1504 pass-notch duplex on that repeater. Transmitter runs about 40 or 50 watts, about 40 watts out of the antenna through that, my isolator panel. So it works very well. Got a preamp on it, and a receive can ahead of the preamp, and that, the whole combination works very well. And it's up the comp site, so I have to worry about other things getting into my system. I have an extra one. I bought them years ago, anticipating using them for other things. They're just not in use right now, and I don't think I'll ever use them. I think I have at least one, possibly two, extra T1504 duplexers.
Are you suggesting that Chet should get a hold of you and see if he can make a deal? Because maybe you've got the piece of hardware he's looking for. Is that what you're suggesting, Joe? Go ahead.
He wants to. My call is at protonmail.com. ProTonMail.com.
There's a possible solution to your problem, Chet. Maybe that way you can get enough quality and 110 dB of isolation. Now you're in the right ballpark. 70 is nowhere near enough. B2AHK, do you need a fill? K2RAW, go ahead, Chet.
Yeah, but the problem is I'm looking for 421 and 426 frequency range. That complicates things a little more, Rich, but...
Can you handle that joke?
I'd have to check the duplexer. I don't know if the passes will actually go down that far. I'm using in the 440 amateur range. I don't know if they stretch down to 420. That would take me a week or so to check one of them out and find out if I can get the passes, not even tuning the notches, but just get the passes correctly at 420. So I don't have an answer to that right now. Never tried to extend them down there.
Even if it doesn't go down there, I think there are not too major a bit of surgery required where you can add an extra lens to that reentrant rod to bring it down to 420. Or maybe they're very difficult to disassemble, and that's out of the question. What do you think, Joe? WP2RYY, K2RIW.
WA2RYY, Dick. I've never tried that. I don't know. These things are very touchy duplexes. They're very difficult to adjust correctly using, if you use the procedure that Motorola tells you to use, you can adjust it and come out with, you know, fairly good results, maybe something approaching 90-100 dB isolation. If you do it extremely careful, like I'm capable of doing, I can get the thing to go down 110 dB port to port. But as far as the lowest frequency range, I'll have an answer next week.
Okay, sounds like you've got a possible approach here, Chet. WP2AHK, K2RIW. I keep making that mistake. Sorry about that, Joe. Chet, go ahead if you need any fills. Sounds like you've got a possible good deal here, Chet, in my opinion.
Well, maybe Christmas will arrive early for me because I just don't have any luck finding such a thing that I need. So maybe we can make a deal. But Joe gave his email address way too fast for my old ears. I'm just wondering if he could just send me an email. It's so easy. WB2AHK@AOL. And just that way I can communicate with him. WB2AHK@AOL. I'll never get your email address because my hearing is like 75% ruined already. I'm struggling with a hearing situation. So if you could do that, Joe, I appreciate it. All right. We won't hold up the net on that, but I am very interested, Joe. I will communicate with you by email. Thank you. Back to net, WB2AHK.
Chet, very simple. My call letters, WA2RYY, @PROTONMAIL.com. Roton Mail.
But T and P sounds the same to me. I'm seriously hearing impaired. So a T and a P is the same. So I have Tango, Romeo, Ocean, Tango, Ocean, Nancy, N-A-I-L, nail.com. I guess I got it wrong. Over.
Papa, Radio, Oscar, Tango, Oscar, November, Mary, Alpha, India, Lima, Dot, Charlie, Oscar, Mary. How's that?
Beautiful. Now I got it. Phonetics helped me. Thank you very much. And if I get the duplexer, I'm going to try to get a new set of ears. That will be wonderful because I'm really struggling along. It's rough. All right. I got it. Thanks, Joe. I'll send you an email. Okay, back to that. Bingo. There might be some hope for my project. Thank you. WB2AHK.
Yeah, Chet, I think that particular duplexer that Joe is describing to you, built by Motorola, I suspect it's very high in quality, beyond the price you'd be willing to pay for it. You and Joe probably will come to a nice deal where it's not too expensive for you. And even if it doesn't directly tune there immediately, I can think of various ways that you can take it apart, modify it, and make it go a little bit lower in frequency. I think you're going to get there. I think it's going to give you the best approach to what you need, because unless you're in an extremely quiet location, 70 dB of isolation is nowhere near enough to get a reliable repeater in a dense environment without getting an awful lot of intermodulation distortions and things like that. Okay, Joe's next, W2RYY. K2RYW, go ahead, Joe.
Okay, this question is going to need some help with the form of you obtaining a piece of paper and a writing utensil. Can you do that first? Because I try to explain this to you, it's just going to go nowhere quickly.
Yeah, but you're so good at drawing mental pictures. I've got a pencil and a piece of paper, fire away. And go slow and put yourself in my shoes, make believe you're listening to what you're about to say and see what kind of a picture I'm going to be able to draw. You got it, Joe.
Okay. Draw two sine waves. Only the top halves of two sine waves. You can make them 2 inches wide or so, and maybe an inch apart as you leave one going to the other. Okay? Do that first. You don't have to draw a line underneath the bottom of the baseline. It's really unimportant. Okay?
Got it. Fire away.
All right. Since each one is going to be identical, you'll form a better mental picture quickly. At the left side of the first sine wave, that's going to be, you know how a sine wave works, that's going to be 0 degrees. The top of the sine wave is going to be 90 degrees, and the bottom approaches 0.0 is going to be 180. So at about 40 degrees to 44 degrees, draw four vertical lines around that point in the sine wave.
Got it.
At about maybe 100 degrees, a little past 90, draw again four vertical lines, a degree apart. The actual artistic representation to yourself doesn't really matter. And then draw some more lines at about maybe 150 or 160 degrees. Again, four more vertical lines. Now, both sine waves, you don't have to draw it both unless you want to, but they're going to be identical looking. The peak of each sine wave is going to be approximately 1.4 megahertz apart in distance as measured on a spectrum analyzer. Now, the reason I'm telling you to draw this, now you have a better picture of what I see on a spectrum analyzer. The vertical lines are noise I'm trying to track. And my question is, this noise is coming from a particular direction on my TV antenna, about 45 degrees from my house. It's power line noise. Why am I seeing this noise displayed over the air that resembles a sine wave? And if I reduce the sweep of my analyzer from 1 meg down to 0.1, those little tiny vertical lines don't change at all. You cannot lock onto each particular part of the sine wave within at all. You never get to see those vertical lines ever separate more than from one sweep to another, from 1 meg down to like 0.1. If you go lower than that, then they simply disappear. If I put the service monitor, which I'm listening to these things on, on AM receive, it's a raucous 120 hertz type of buzz I hear. So my question is, now that you have the mental picture of what I have, as I've seen, why do I see this noise being displayed as a pseudo type of half of a sine wave? Back to you.
Well, first of all, your spectrum analyzer or your pan adapter display or whatever represents power as a vertical deflection up. It can't represent power as a vertical deflection down. So it is full wave rectifying, even if the phase was down, so to speak, it's going to fold everything back up. So that's why you see ups. I presume the sine waves themselves are either at 60 hertz or 120 hertz, depending on how you're setting up the horizontal sweep. Each of those vertical spikes is a particular breakdown somewhere in the system. Arc over of a egg insulator or something like that is my guess. So the fact that you were looking for the spikes to go down below the baseline is what I think you were saying, and that's because of the four-wave rectification phenomena where it displays power as a vertical up deflection. It has no choice. That may be some of the information you're looking for, or I'm misunderstanding. Over to you, Joe, K2LIW.
Maybe I didn't explain that part as easily as you understand it. What I meant was, if you go from 1 meg per horizontal division down to 0.1 per horizontal division, those vertical lines don't change spacing. You cannot lock onto any one particular vertical horizontal line. And here's the thing that's also a little bit of a mystery. Sometimes I see four of them, sometimes I see two, maybe three, and it seems to, like, you know, change in a type of rhythm, and you'll actually have maybe two lines in each set of spikes, sometimes three, sometimes four, sometimes five. And the Rorschach's buzz changes a little bit in intensity also when it happens. Am I looking at multiple insulators breaking down in a particular direction, like maybe from two or three poles from my house that might be a quarter mile away, half mile away? Back to you.
Yeah, there's a lot of missing information here in what you're giving us, Joe. Your horizontal sweep starts at what frequency, stops at what frequency? Question number one. Question number two, are you taking the horizontal sweep and line syncing it? Is that what makes the picture sit still? Over to you, Joe, K2LIW.
Okay, I wasn't sure if the frequency information was actually pertinent to this discussion. I'm seeing this stuff anywhere from 48 megahertz up to around 77 megahertz, 77 to 80, 82, 83, 85. I can't go higher than that because I have an FM trap in my amplifier for the TV antenna. This is what I'm seeing, and I'm looking at this from a TV antenna which is horizontally polarized. And it seems to be the highest intensity in this particular case with these noise spikes when I'm pointing at 045 degrees azimuth. So I'm putting maybe I'm putting the analyzer at say 78 megahertz, and I can adjust the horizontal control for 1 meg per division maximum. If I go higher than that, it changes the baseline, and you also can't listen to it anymore either with the service monitor. Receiver can't do that. It actually makes the lines go higher, but they still seem very narrow in width by themselves. I can never lock on any one particular spike by itself. And I would imagine it has something to do with because of its very short duration.
Okay. Is the horizontal sweep free running or is it line sunk horizontal sweep? Joe, go ahead.
Horizontal sweep, I believe, is a line sync. That's automatic in the instrument. I have no control of that, not like an oscilloscope.
Okay. And when you make the scan width go below 1 meg per centimeter, I think you're saying you can no longer lock on one of those lines. Is that what you're saying, Joe?
Well, what it does to the picture, Dick, is you'll see the actual group of lines go a little further apart, but not very much, not as much as you think by making the picture go in a ratio of 10 to 1, going from, say, 1 meg per centimeter horizontally down to 0.1 meg per centimeter horizontally. You still see these groups of lines, extremely narrow vertical spikes, as I had you draw on the paper. And they also seem to be in groups of four, but sometimes they change. They'll go back to maybe a group of two, sometimes three, sometimes five, sometimes six.
Yeah, when you get a line breakdown of a insulator, it's making spikes, and the spikes are extremely broad in frequency spectrum. They go DC to light. You see the spikes on a particular position on the screen because of the probability of intercept. In other words, because your horizontal sweep is being synchronized with the 60 cycle line, the instant of the spike occurs at a particular horizontal position that gets displayed on the screen, and you think it represents a particular frequency of that spike. It's not. If you could somehow remove the line sync and the horizontal sweep was free running, you would see those lines drifting all over the place. Each time a spike occurs, wherever the sweep is at that instant, it displays a spike at that particular position. It looks to you like it represents a particular frequency. It doesn't. It's a time domain probability of intercept taking place between the sweeping and when the spikes occur on the 60 cycle line. So that's the reason why you can't zero in on one of those spikes. It really isn't at that frequency. You know what I'm saying there, Joe? K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yes, I understand that. That makes a lot of sense. But, okay, going back to the other part of the question here, what is making the spikes become additive and subtractive? Well, sometimes I'm seeing, like I said, a minimum of maybe two to a maximum of five or six within a group.
It sounds like your power line system has got various ways of breaking down. And by the way, when you change the resolution bandwidth, 1 meg of bandwidth and 100 kc and 10 kc, my guess is those spikes start taking on a very different shape when you do that. Is that true?
Yes. The automatic bandwidth control is probably predetermined within the instrument itself. It changes when you go from 0.1 meg horizontally down to 20 kilohertz, 10 kilohertz, and 1 kilohertz. When I go down to 20, I cannot see the spikes anymore. You just see the lower residual noise that seems to change shape, but you can't see the spikes anymore.
Yeah, that's normal. You're now talking about the impulse response of your IF system with a more narrow resolution bandwidth. So those spikes, they look like they're on some particular frequency. They are not. You're seeing those, even though the display is horizontally frequency domain, they're really being displayed in the time domain. And if you had the ability to turn off the line syncing so that the horizontal sweep was free running, you would see those lines occurring all over on that screen. So you're going to get more information by using whatever receiver you've got, where you can take the output of the receiver, whether it be the IF strip, the audio output, whatever, into a fast oscilloscope, where now with the oscilloscope you can adjust the horizontal sweep speed with or without line syncing and free running and so on. And you're going to see those spikes are really time domain spikes at a particular portion of the 60 cycle waveform, Joe. The B2RYY, K2RIW.
Okay, well, this whole discussion is actually because of this. It does upset my TV viewing, or DXing, so to speak, on the lower TV channels because it predominantly seems to occur in channels 2 through 6. And it's actually becoming rather annoying. The first noise location I located was actually about a linear distance from my house, about 3/4 of a mile away. And I was able to draw an azimuth of 240 from my house and check different streets along that line, and I did find it by listening to it with an R7000 in the car attached to my 6-meter antenna. I was able to hear this raucous type of noise. I got right up on pretty much to the pole that was making the noise, and I did call up PSEG, LI. They sent a crew out, and they did have the insulator repaired at the top of the pole. So that's one location out of a couple.
Sounds like you're doing some good bunny hunting, fox hunting, to find the actual locations of these things. Suggestion I was going to make. Can't think of it right now. The fact that you're getting more on channels 2 through 6, the lower VHF channels, that's because impulse noise breakdown falls off something like 12 dB per octave. As you go to higher and higher UHF frequency, the amount of energy in each of those spikes is going to be less. So that's normal operation of impulse noise. So those spikes are not occurring at a particular frequency. They're occurring at a particular time of the 60-cycle waveform. Let's hope you're able to find those other breakdown insulators that you can continue your digital television DXing. Out of curiosity, what's the best digital television DX you've seen so far? Over to you, Joe, K2RIW.
I'll tell you that in a moment, but the other noise I do listen, I can listen to this, that gives you a raucous type of buzz at 120 hertz. There's something else that's not buried in the noise, but it's above the noise, but that has a distinct pattern to it, and the repetition rate is not 120 hertz. because I can use the compare function in the generator, internal with the internal audio generator, tied to the scope and do like an XY type of thing. And this other noise is like 119.9, 119.8. It definitely moves when I put it at 120, so it's slightly lower. What do you think that might be?
Sounds like the result of some kind of a synthesizer or somebody running a generator. I mean, the 60 cycle current coming out of a Con Ed Loco or whatever is extremely accurate on 60 hertz. And if you're off at 60 hertz and 120 and 180 and so on, the hertz are going to be the harmonics. And if you're seeing something off of those harmonics, then it's some other kind of a generator that's not locked to Loco or Con Ed. Over to you, Joe, KTRIW.
Okay, that stuff becomes annoying too, but it's not PSEGLI's problem, so but find that locally. I haven't been able to actually lock on that kind of stuff yet, find out the specific location for it. Okay, very good. I just wanted to bring the topic up because I'm sure other people will have come by line noise interference from time to time, maybe have some curiosity about the whole discussion in general.
The people who run solar voltaics on their house, I think that system ultimately has to create 60 cycle power that they pump back into the line. And there the instantaneous frequency and phasing could be leading and lagging at times, and maybe that shows you a possible source of the stuff that fell at 118 instead of 120. So do consider a source of noise being somebody's solar voltaic system with solar cells on his roof as a possible source of the noise, Joe, go ahead.
Okay. That becomes a problem where it's not really a power company's issue to go fix the problem. It's actually a private owner. If I see this and it's coming from, say, somebody's house two blocks away, physically two blocks away, or linearly maybe 800 feet line of sight point to point, can they actually have equipment that's allowed to radiate that kind of RF level? And I'm talking about levels about minus 80 dBm coming into my TV antenna from that kind of distance. Do you think that's legal?
Yeah, you're going to require an awful lot of diplomacy and not to get enabled mad at you, but there's probably a way you can find out what are the FCC limits. And minus 80 dBm sounds to me like it might be exceeding the extraneous radiation limit, if you know what I mean. Over to you, Joe.
Okay, I'd have to probably contact them first before I go try to bang on people's houses and, jump up and down crazy. All right, great. Thanks for attending this. Over to the next guy.
Okay, the next person on our list was Phil, KB2, Delta X-ray Charlie. You've got it, Phil. K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
K2RIW, KB2DX. Good evening, hopefully as well. I've been doing some research, directly by my 30-year-old 757GX, and what I like seeing is these multi-band VAWHF radios. I'm quite familiar with 2.40 meters, but I'm also with 1.2 gigahertz, otherwise known as 1200 megahertz. I don't know much of anything about 1200 megahertz. I don't know what has to offer these, particularly at 10 watts output that the radios are putting out. I don't know much about, what kind of antennas casual user would use who wants to do terrestrial as well as satellite stuff. Maybe you can hit me a bit on what does 1.2 gigahertz have to offer somebody here in the New York, Long Island region. K2RIW, K2DXC.
Yeah, first thing I should tell you, Phil, is that your audio is about almost 10 decibels lower than it should be. You've got very quiet, very low audio. So for the time being, you ought to eat that mic and shout into it until you get a chance to reset the deviation control in that particular rig that you're using. I have to turn up everybody listening to you has to turn up the volume quite high when you're talking. 1296 or 1200 megacycle band in the Newark area is rarely used. There was at one time, and there probably still is, a 1250 megahertz repeater of this repeater group, Limark, located at Glen Oaks. Whether or not it's active right now, I guess NY2H or Lou will have to tell us. So there is a repeater in the area, the total number of people using it, you can probably count them on one hand when you wait for the whole week to find each one of them. So the total activity is quite low. So if you have to make a substantial dollar investment in order to get that particular capability of a rig, it's not easy to justify, because the good news is that you'll be talking to an elite group of guys. The bad news is there's not anywhere near the number of people to talk to like you're familiar with on 2 meters and 440. So it exists, but it's a bit rare. And the range you get on 1250 is quite a bit lower than you would on, say, 2 meters or 440. Let's see if Lou's available, who can give us that information. NY2H, if you're around, Lou, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I have a comment on 2EO.
So let's first find if Lou is around. NY2H, are you there, Lou?
Yeah, hi, Dick, NY2H. Dick, I don't have an answer for you. The status, but I'll find out.
Okay, so a very noisy Lou said he doesn't have the status, he'll find out. So I think you're saying you're not quite sure if the 1250 repeater at Glen Oaks is operational at best time. Is that what you're saying, Lou? Go ahead. I think you said Roger, but I'm not sure. Move to a slightly location and repeat your answer.
All right, I'll move around. I'm on an HD. Yeah, I don't know the answer, but I will find out.
Okay, I heard you say you don't know the answer, but you will find out. And when you say you will find out, that means in the next couple of days you'll find that out, or are you saying in the next hour you might find that out? Back to you, Lou.
No, probably in the next couple of days.
Okay, the next couple of days. And Rich has an opinion on 1250 megs. Have you used it, Rich? N2EO? K2LX?
Richie, your comments are always stupid, Richie. Your comments are stupid.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yes, Dick. I have used 1200. Gotta think up on their sideband. Not FM. It was satellite. Well, there's probably a new satellite coming. Hopefully a GEO. Because ICOM came out with a radio. It's a multi-mode radio, 2, 440, and 1200. It's called an IC9700, 9711. Go look it up on, I got a catalog, that's all I know about it, DX Engineering. Me and Brian were discussing the possibility that the manufacturers know more than we, and that maybe a GEO is coming, or a semi, you know, a millennial orbit satellite. But you always think sideband, not FM up there.
Okay. Limont did have a 1250 megahertz repeater at Glen Oaks, which the people who used it were fairly pleased with it when they were using it. So there is FM operation up there, Rich. Go ahead.
Yes, I know. Barry told me, as far as he knows, it's not working right now.
Okay, so it might not be operational. So there's a little bit of sideband activity, a little bit of FM activity, but the bottom line is in the metro area is where you're going to get the maximum activity, and there's not very much of it from what I'm hearing, Phil. So I wouldn't make a big investment in 1250 until you find out, are you going to be alone? KB2, Delta X-Ray Charlie, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hello, Barry.
KB2, yes. I swapped out my microphone. Has my audio picked up any?
Negative. It's still very low. So you got to eat that microphone and shout into it, Phil. You're 10 dB lower in audio than you should be, in my opinion. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay, I don't like that. I'll have to work on that. Yes, the ICOM 9700 was the radio that I was looking at. I wanted to update my radio, my 736, kind of predated all the computer interfaces that are out there. Wondering, well, I'm going to have an extra module, how do you build it? How to, you know, try swapping out a module for another band, like 736 has. and I'd hate to think that I'd have some part of the radio go to waste and not to be used.
Maybe a casual single sideband, maybe satellite work that I've done in the past, 736 with, and then you got the issue of another antenna that you got to put up. And I didn't really want to have to deal with something solving with that. So I'm going to have to, like, kind of look at this situation again and kind of reevaluate the one that